Great. I'm Cheryl Paul, and it is with great joy that I'm here today with Alanis Morissette. We have a full house today, lots of people from all around the world listening in, and new mothers and fathers, and I'm sure longtime fans of yours and clients of mine. So welcome to everyone, and welcome, Alanis. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for creating this. I thank you from the bottom of my new mom heart.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah. We had such a fabulous conversation last year about your transition into motherhood, to marriage, and lots of other topics, and I'm just so excited to talk about your transition into motherhood. So first of all, congratulations on the birth of your beautiful baby boy.
Thank you.
And for your birth as a mother.
Yeah.
You are almost 9 months old today as a mother. Is that right?
Yeah. On the 25th, which is
Saturday. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I remember when I was in a new mother's group, and it was about 9 months in, and the leader said that it was about 9 months that new mothers found their mother legs.
Mm.
And I just love that term. You know, it's like rocky waters for a while, but then you find that stride. So my first question for you is, how does it feel to be at this point of your transition and birthing this new identity as a mother? And do you feel like you have found your stride?
Yeah, I love the getting the legs metaphor. I feel there's some milestone to this nine-month marker.
Mm-hmm.
Where it actually feels somewhat real. I still haven't wrapped my entire soul around the whole new identity, and I think that might be perhaps a work in progress until my dying day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm now finding a way to have all the identities blend together in a way where none of them feel like they're being ignored, which I thought wasn't possible, actually.
Mm.
And for me, it's about spending enough time with my son ever so that physiologically and hormonally I feel grounded and bonded and connected,
mm-hmm.
and that I spend enough time in other areas of my life that are very important so that I feel sane and like some semblance of a sense of self can still be intact, even though that's kind of a joke in the first year from what I've heard from other moms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going well, and I have my moments, you know.
Mm-hmm. So did you say that you didn't think it was possible to blend the different identities?
I definitely didn't think it was possible. I thought I had to wear one hat wholeheartedly and that I would do that one area of life well,
mm-hmm.
or that I would do both and that somehow they would both suffer for it. And so I was hell-bent on finding a way to pick the top priorities and nail them, you know. But, you know, I've heard variations on that theme from different alpha moms who are very career-oriented,
mm-hmm.
and yet at the same time, you know, I'm very vocationally focused, and at the same time I'm very, very attachment parenting, bonding, connection-oriented with my baby, too. So it was a challenge to find the combo platter.
Mm-hmm. So say more about that, because I know it's a huge question, and a lot of people who wrote in with their questions had that exact question, is how are you doing that? How are you finding that blend, that balance, if there is such a thing as balance once you become a mom, you know, of the different identities, and how would you categorize those identities, you know, mother, work self, what are those in your mind, those archetypes?
Yeah, I think you just said something operative, which is, you know, how to find the balance, if it's even possible. I think one of the best things that I've applied to the last 9 months in particular is realizing that the inner parenting job with my inner child versus the outer parenting job with my outer child, it's been perfectly okay in retrospect for me to forego the connection with my own inner child, even though my inner child is kind of freaking out a little bit and kind of upset with me. There were times where there was just no way for me to do anything other than prioritize ever over everything, including my sanity and my well-being.
Yeah.
And I think so long as I was holding on to the erroneous thought that I could keep my life pie completely balanced and perfectionistically nailed it all, I was in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But the second I gave myself the green light to have things be completely out of balance, mm-hmm. and quote unquote wrong for a while,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
that was actually okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped for me to drop the perfectionistic approach.
Mm. Yes, easier said than done, I think, for many
yeah.
of us that
yeah,
fall into the perfectionistic category. But I think you said a really key phrase there, which is for a while. You know,
yeah.
I think for new mothers, the overwhelm and the total immersion in baby world, and especially if you're doing an attachment parenting model, which is, you know, pretty 24/7, and it's just
yep.
that's what it is.
Yep.
That it can feel like you're going to go out of your mind and lose your sanity. And the lifeline is knowing that this is finite, that the time does pass. And like you're saying, it doesn't mean you have to completely forego every day, you know, for a year, your sense of selfhood. So it sounds like you have found a way to take that time for self one way or another.
Yeah, and to be perfectly transparent, I haven't had a lot of it.
Yes.
You know, I had this really sweet kind of naive intention before I gave birth that, you know, I was going to make sure I had a certain amount of time per day for my marriage and a certain amount
mm-hmm.
of time per day for me and for my servicefulness. And then I was going to take, you know, enough time with my son, and I was going to get enough sleep. And, you know, all of that went out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my resistance to the imbalance, like I said a second ago, was my challenge. As soon as I realized that there's just no way for
mm-hmm.
me, there was no way for me to balance it, and it,
mm-hmm.
and I had to make it okay that everything was out of balance.
yes, and I think it's a setup. You know, that's the setup for new mothers, is to say you can do it all, and you have to take time for yourself, and you have to nap when your baby naps, and you have to do that. You know, and for many new mothers, it's just impossible. And I think there is such relief and serenity that can come when if you can surrender.
Yeah.
To the fact that it's going to be so crazily, unbelievably, unimaginably out of balance.
Yes.
For
and
a period of time.
Totally. And I have probably had some existential crises, aka total meltdowns, probably 9 of them. One per month.
Uh-huh.
If not one per week. And, it, you know, there were different parts of the chapter where I was, you know, on the slippery slope into postpartum depression, in and out of that, and crossing my fingers, and, you know, where did my connection with source go? It's completely gone. And, oh, wait, it's back. It's back. No, it's gone. You know, and so hormonally and emotionally and intellectually, all of it, it's been a wild roller coaster ride, and I have so much empathy for all mothers around the planet and fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, you know, I was kind of that horrifying woman who before birth thought I had a piece of knowledge or two about how it worked, you know, even sometimes to the point of offering unsolicited advice to sisters-in-laws and et cetera. And now I've not only made amends in that department, but I have no opinion. Anyone who is trying to make it work, you know,
I
support you.
It is the most humbling experience
oh.
once you become a mother, and it's exactly how I felt, you know, was like, wow, anyone who's trying to do this in any situation, in any capacity, wow, how'd you do it?
Yeah, and how are you doing? And if your answer is that you've completely fallen apart, of course you have.
Yes, exactly. And you
yeah.
can't even begin to imagine it until you become a mother. So, you know, I know there's some people on the line that are pregnant, and mm-hmm. I hope that this conversation isn't freaking them out. I hope that by being honest and by giving people permission to mm-hmm. melt down, to break down,
yes.
to know that it really is that overwhelming.
Yep.
You know, that there's more allowance for that. You brought up postpartum depression, and in my worldview, a lot of that, certainly not all of it, but a lot of postpartum depression in our culture is simply a misunderstanding of what's normal to experience after the birth of a baby, that it's normal to grieve.
Yep, the identity is changing, the hormones are all over the place, the marriage is being strained, and that's sometimes putting it lightly.
Uh-huh.
You know, the roles are being defined, and there's ambivalence about these new roles for me, and you know, and then there's this huge amount of love that feels aching and all-consuming, you know, and then, you know, not to mention that the hormonal effect of me probably not getting out of sweatpants for longer than 2 seconds hasn't helped the situation. You know,
yes.
Et cetera. There's a lot
yes.
of that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And to just, you know, say that is what it is. That's normal, you know,
yeah.
And to try to fight it and to think that there's something wrong with you is a lot of what contributes to what we call postpartum depression.
Yep.
You know, instead of just understanding this is what it is, you know, it is that hard.
Yeah, and I was already having a challenge, you know, in the best of times with the self-care practices that I slowly put into place over, you know, 20-some-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
And so that flying out the door was kind of like an anchor for me. And all of a sudden, you know, my space was no longer my space, whether it was actual, you know, literal physical space in my home or internal, you know, intellectual space, emotional space. Everything was co-opted. Everything, it's almost like this beautiful whirlwind takes over your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, and surrender is a hilarious word to use here because it's not so much that I surrender. It was almost like there was a choicelessness in the matter.
Right, right.
Surrender
you
or not.
You have no choice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is what's happening.
It's going to take you down.
Right. And so did you experience it as loss, the loss of your independent, of your space and your you know, your independent thoughts and breathing your own breath? Did you experience it as a loss? Did you let yourself grieve that?
I'm probably in the midst of grieving it right now. I think there's a loss of a lot of things, and certainly I was prepared for it intellectually because I was ready for it. You know, I was maybe perhaps one of the fortunate few who was really ready to have a new chapter and to have personal fulfillment versus professional fulfillment and struggle in the personal department. So I was very ready for it. And at the same time, there's no way to prepare. So I'm still in the midst of the grief, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel now. Maybe it's what you just said a second ago about this 9-month milestone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, 2 weeks in, 2 months in, my mother friends would just say, "Sweetheart, don't worry, it's going to get easier." And I just wanted to punch them in the lip because I was, you know, "What do you mean it's going to get easier? Like, when? For the love of God, when does it get easier?"
I know. It is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
So you talk about preparing for becoming a mother, and I think that you can and you can't, you know.
Right.
And I want to provide some foundation before I ask you this next question. So as you know, a major thrust behind my work with transitions in general and my conscious motherhood work, my new home study program, the Birthing a New Mother, is that the more you prepare on the front end during a transition, meaning emotionally and spiritually, during the engagement, before the move, during pregnancy, the easier it is on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And by easier, I don't necessarily mean easy. I mean, you know, with somewhat a bit more acceptance about what it is. So,
and I love that you're creating a map, too, because then when you arrive there, you think, wow, I've heard of this. This isn't completely outside of my wheelhouse. You know?
Yes, exactly. It's not a total shock, and that, you know, it's possible to temper that shock and to, like you said, avoid that slippery slope. It may be one toe in postpartum depression, but if you hold in the context and if you've done some of that emotional work prior, you can stay out of that particular pool. And so what so many people don't understand is that it's the transition itself that can prepare you somewhat if you approach it from the mindset that every challenge, whether it's trying to conceive for many people, morning sickness, physical challenges, emotional fears, are all opportunities for growth, and that they can start to lay the foundation for the birth of your new identity as a mother. So I listened back on our last interview because you were pregnant. We had touched on some of this, and this is what you said about the first trimester physical challenges. "The first trimester was really challenging for me, especially with my having been super overachiever girl, over-functioning, over-responsible. All of a sudden, I was flattened. I had no energy, and I thought, this is an interesting way for God to have me look at all the things that would block me from being available to this upcoming role of motherhood."
Mm.
There is so much insight and wisdom packed into that statement because you're really speaking to the heart of what it means to approach this transition consciously. So I want to take some time to unpack it, and I want to ask you, how did that experience, that flattening that happened in your first trimester and any other physical or emotional challenges during pregnancy, prepare you for motherhood?
Wow. I'm choked up by your having read that back to me. I think the biggest part for me was looking at my work busyness giving service aholicism.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that every crisis I've ever experienced is God's way of letting me know everything's actually okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That whatever is great.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not great, at least it's okay.
Right. Right.
So me working less, me physically running around less, me being wound up and perfectionistic and leaning toward the tendency of beating myself up, or all of these were brought to task,
mm-hmm.
all of them one at a time, first by what you just mirrored back to me by reading it, which is that physically I couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
And so one way I really receive messages really strongly is through my body.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, my body just was not able to continue going at the rate that it was going at.
Yes.
And so your question was about, what was your question that you just asked?
How did that experience prepare you for motherhood? So you said was, this is an interesting way for God to have me look at all the things that would block me from being available to this upcoming role of motherhood, because many women, pregnancy is a calling through the body, in my worldview, to the feminine, from the masculine model of outward, overachiever, dominant, all of that, the busy, the doing, the achieving, which has its place and is wonderful, but we are out of balance culturally and globally.
We're epidemically addicted to busyness.
Yes.
Productivity.
Yes, well said. And so if there's ever a calling for women that invites us into the feminine,
mm-hmm.
That place of being, that place of receptivity, of softness, of openness,
mm-hmm.
It's pregnancy, and it's this, evolving role of becoming a mother.
And it's one that I went through and to some degree still am going through, kicking and screaming a little bit, because it brings up all the fears, the survival fears, and
mm-hmm.
in my case, and in a lot of my friends' cases, we're active participants in being, the bring home the bacon, the veggie bacon. We're bringing home the bacon, some of us, and we're, whatever roles that we had before baby,
mm-hmm.
they don't instantly disappear because we're being invited into this supreme, beautiful femininity.
Right.
So it's almost like a lot of the post-feminist sort of modern women are dealing not only with the physiological, hormonal invitation into the divine feminine or
mm-hmm.
this full surrender conversation, but we're still mired in the survival conversation, which is inherently
mm-hmm.
masculine, as you just said. So it's not like those masculine requirements, if they're even able to be called that, it's not
mm-hmm.
like those disappear,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like there's more space being given to the survival question, whether it's financial, whether it's time management, whether it's roles in the world, and I actually think, for me, listening to my body helped me find some version of a balance that I have now, because if I was working too much,
mm-hmm.
I would have this ache of missing my son and kind of freaking out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, if I was ignoring other aspects of what I believe my contribution is on this planet,
mm-hmm.
and I was sort of disappearing a little bit, quote-unquote, too much into motherhood, if that's even possible,
mm-hmm.
My body would also, I'd have this horrible feeling in my stomach or my throat. So
mm-hmm.
it's almost me being the intellectual creature that I can be, it's almost like my orientation went more toward how does my gut feel? And so much is it about, for me, is about intuition, whether it's working with a new nanny or, what's happening in my marriage and where I'm going to cut myself
mm-hmm.
slack. And so much of it is body and intuition. And
mm-hmm.
while I definitely relied on that in my art,
mm-hmm.
I'd be lying if I said I relied on it wholeheartedly in my day-to-day life, whereas now I have to rely on it because it's really the guiding force for me.
Mm. Wow. So in that sense, pregnancy, birth, motherhood has really solidified, it sounds like, that relationship and that form of communication with your body.
Yes, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God. And it also opened up a whole new version of spiritual practice, that it doesn't have to look a certain way, you know, because, you know, short of me going for a walk, you know, avoiding paparazzi outside my house and praying to God, like, don't let me go all the way down the slippery slope, God, please help me. You know, so that sort of became my spiritual practice, was the teaching prayer.
So everything. Well, you know, and the, you know, not that, this is an interesting question in a conversation among my friends and I, is, you know, is motherhood itself a spiritual practice, you know, and where is, you know, where, I mean, clearly the divine is right next to you, you know, in your arms. I mean, you know, having a baby is like holding a piece of God. So, you know, is that enough? And then the challenges that come up, and, you know, and then the challenges that come up around having a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, you know, as they start to develop their own unique personality, their will, you know, their separateness, the challenges around, I want you to do this, and they don't do it, you know, so.
As one of my girlfriends said, there's something really humbling about having your 3-year-old willfully throw oatmeal at your face. Yeah, I can see that be humbling.
That's how it goes, you know. I mean, this little person, sure, they pack a punch with their will.
Yeah.
And so, you know, approaching that through the lens of spirituality, which is a different kind of spirituality than sitting and meditating.
Well, I think it's all spiritual. So
right.
If it's a career crisis, if it's a physiological crisis, if it's a new role, motherhood, wife, any queen, any role that is new, I think, and this speaks directly to what I believe is such a big piece of your contribution, which I'm forever grateful for. Mm-hmm. Every role is an invitation in toward more wholeness and more integration and more deeper connection with spirit, a direct connection, you know, because in those moments where I actually felt, and it was probably an erroneous belief again, but I felt there was no one that I could go to. It was in those moments that I had to go directly to my own source, to my own connection with the divine. And had I not been reduced, I would not maybe have reached out to that part, you know, however we want to define it. So I think that all of these crises, if I can call them that, are these amazing invitations. And they don't feel great. You know, they don't all feel great. Some of them do, but not all of them.
Yes. Yeah. For some reason, I'm thinking about your birth, which I don't know anything about, but I see birth itself, childbirth itself, as another one of these opportunities, as challenging as it can be, and sometimes it's not, but. You know, as an opportunity, as a doorway. I mean, it is the doorway that separates you from the identity of non-mother to mother. And so I'm curious how that experience was for you, and if you view your birthing experience as part of your
portal
preparation or foundation. As what?
As my portal.
As your portal,
yeah. Yeah, I all I keep thinking about, because it was a pretty traumatic experience for me. You know, I wish I could be the mom that says that it was this blissful, beautiful, singularly blissful experience. And, you know, it was at home and challenged for me. And there was no part of me that needed to prove I was a warrior. A lot of sweet, well-meaning friends say, wow, aren't you proud of yourself? And I just think, well, I already knew that I could rise to some occasions, so there was really nothing to prove so much.
Yeah.
You know, and so I have no regret about having done it the way that I did, and at the same time, I completely understand every version of childbirth that is available to womankind, and I high-five every woman for any choice that she makes. But for me, it was a, you know, I've always been kind of a lofty girl. I've always tried to escape my body, and so pregnancy and certainly childbirth and, frankly, postpartum journey is all about, like, hammering me back into the body. You know, to the degree that I thought I could get away with dissociating, there's nothing about childbirth at home that allows you to check out. And Lord knows I tried.
Oh, yes.
You know, I tried all my sort of, it was kind of an ego leveling, it was a leveling experience for me. Even pregnancy was. It was my realizing that I actually am in the body. I had an amazing conversation with an author friend of mine right before, and she knows me to be the kind of person that would kind of escape into these sort of headier conversations, and she said, "You're really in the body now, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes," and I don't know if I like it, you know, but there's really no choice. Yeah.
That's right. So what if you're comfortable going into it, what was traumatic? Was it the pain? Was it the length of it? What was traumatic for you?
It was that I could not intellectually avoid the profound excruciation.
And
I'd seen so many DVDs. Literally, I'm the girl that I'm research queen. So I think I watched every DVD twice that was available to birthing kind, and I read all the books, and I just thought, wow, I haven't heard a lot of women talk about this, perhaps underbelly, pardon the pun, of how intense this is. You know, I mean, I'd heard jokes about 18-wheelers driving and careening through our bodies, and but I always thought that was kind of a joke. And I, you know, not to mention any names, but I'd investigated so many different approaches to birthing, and all of them were beautiful and helpful in certain ways, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, from my experience anyway, and I've heard women have every different experience under the sun, but for me, there was nothing that could prepare me for how difficult that was, and how much, no matter how hard I tried to turn away from it, there was no way to turn away. It was having its way with me, and I'd only had a few experiences in my life where there was just no way to check out.
Did you beg to go to the hospital? I did.
I wished I'd had the energy to even think of putting words in my mouth. But I definitely was praying the whole time, you know, and the prayer at times was profoundly meditative, and it was like, you know, not to offend anybody, but it was like one long giant drug trip that that at times was celestial, very briefly, and then at times was the most intense spiral downwards and upwards that I've ever had. And you know, I felt ancestors coming in when I was in the middle of it. I was, you know, I felt my grandmother in the room. It was very, I mean, it was a long, long prayer where I was in the physical, in this, and in the spiritual to the exact same degree at the same time. And I've never really had that, you know. I mean, I've had some ecstatic moments during chanting or dancing or meditating, but as you probably know more than anybody, this was a whole other level of it.
Oh, yes. How long was your labor?
25 hours.
Yeah. And given all that, you still want to do it again, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to do it twice, actually.
Yeah,
amnesia is real. Or, you know, I did a lot of post-traumatic healing. You know, I did a lot of sessions around PTSD after, because it was, you know, I was wound up tight for a while. And even now when I think about it, I just think, God, is my little fragile, sensitive self going to be able to bear that again, you know? And if there's this warrior, hilarious, I don't know what this part of me is, but this part of me that just goes, of course, let's go. You know, and this other really fragile, scared, sensitive part of me that's just thinking, oh, God, I'm terrified, you know? So for me, it's about welcoming all these parts, you know, the part that is horrified, the part that is proud, the part that wouldn't do it any differently, the part that thinks it was crazy, you know, and I just, for me, it's about welcoming them whenever they pop up, and they pop up all the time.
And birth is such a profoundly poignant and powerful opportunity, I think, where we look at ourselves directly in the mirror, you know, and you know, the shadow is held up and the light is held up, and like you were saying, you were straddling these two worlds, you know, the body and the physical on one side, and the spiritual and the celestial on the other, and, you know, having these divine moments, you know, perhaps just sandwiched right in between moments of pure physical hell. And then whatever comes through that emotionally, you know, I think takes a long time to unravel. You know, even in a so-called, you know, good birth story like yours would be considered.
Beautiful birth story,
healthy, you know, no complications really, but then the unraveling of your birth story is so rich, you know, and I think it's a lot of what happens in these first 9 months, first year, as you are birthing your new identity.
Yeah, and a new identity and a new context too, right? Like
mm-hmm.
A mom becoming a mom in 2011 and 12 is different than when my mom was doing it.
Oh, yes.
You know, so it's about, you know, how does a relatively alpha woman do
mm-hmm.
attachment parenting? You know, it's virgin snow for me. It's virgin snow. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to be on the front lines of defining, you know, collectively with billions of women right now, defining what it is to be a mom today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have these really beautiful groups of women that come over with their babies, and we all just kind of sit around and look at each other like we've all gone to war together. Yeah. And, you know, it's been quite heartening having other moms around, you know. And
yes.
I feel like a student with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're student and teachers with each other depending upon any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, you know, there's a sweet, unspoken love in the room or in the pool, wherever we are with our
mm-hmm.
baby,
mm-hmm.
that it's like our arms are wrapped around each other just by even staying in touch, you know. So I think one thing that pulled me out of what could have become maybe a deeper version of postpartum depression
mm-hmm.
was my having some people that I could text at 2, 4, 5 in the morning and just have them laugh at me. Or
oh, yeah.
God bless my women, you know.
Oh, the support and the community of other mothers is essential.
Yeah.
And I think for many people is the deciding factor that, you know, either pulls them out, and if they don't have it, can let them sink down.
Yep, and then the partner conversation too, right? And it was my first year of marriage, so we did the perfect storm, you know. We did the let's get married and have a baby, woohoo,
yes.
We're all done in one fell swoop.
Oh, boy.
So we had our, you know, we had our first year in this context, and I have
mm-hmm.
to give my husband a lot of credit for just staying the course with me and being steadfast and, you know, and for us both to be gentle with ourselves. He's birthing a new identity as father in a whole new context of 2011. What does it mean to be an integrated masculine, feminine, empowered father, husband, man in the world?
And,
you know, so he's going through his whole new identity being birthed. And, yeah, wow.
Oh, it's so much. It is so much. I mean, mm-hmm. even for couples who've been together 5 or 10 years, the transition is enormous for most people.
Yeah.
But certainly when you are colliding one transition into another,
yeah.
it adds a, adds a whole new element of challenge to it.
Mm-hmm.
So my next question for you is about, you know, for me, when I was pregnant, one of my biggest fears of becoming a new mother and of motherhood was about sleep deprivation, and that ended up manifesting. That was, in fact, one of the biggest challenges. Is I was blessed with a child that didn't sleep.
Yes.
And, you know, was just really constantly up all night, you know, every 10 minutes sometimes.
Yep.
So my question for you is, what was your biggest fear, and what has ended up being, you know, the biggest challenge? Was it, in fact, that fear or something different?
The sleep deprivation is a big one, you know, right
mm-hmm.
as we're speaking right now. I had about 3 hours last night.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, sleep deprivation, there's a few quotes that I laugh and giggle about, one of which is, I think, that after 3 days of not enough sleep, you're clinically insane.
So, oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, there are some emails that I remember, you know, people saying, hey, thanks for that email, and I'll think, wow, I don't even remember writing that one. Hope it was good.
And
then a few friends that have said that I've sent the same email 3 days in a row. So I basically cut myself a lot of slack.
Yes.
And, you know, I beg for forgiveness, whether it's directly or not, from people who are on the receiving end of a profoundly sleep-deprived human being.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I feel part of the club because I know so many new parents just don't sleep.
Yes.
And I've had insomnia issues for as far back as I can remember.
Mm.
So, again, the non-resistance piece is such a big spiritual credo for me. You know,
mm-hmm.
the degree to which I'm avoiding or resisting or running away from something or trying to change something that's slightly unchangeable is the degree to which I suffer horribly. So, you know, my whole thing is, hey, I'm going to be sleep deprived. You know, I see photos of myself and I just think, wow, I feel like I was a president and I aged in, you know, 1 year.
I know.
Like,
I know.
It's just like,
I know. But it comes back. I promise you it comes back. I was in that camp, and I can't say I'm completely out of it. I mean, if 3 days of not enough sleep Wow, I'm like definitely certifiably insane then.
Yeah, well, this is a part of you I love, by the way.
Yeah.
We have to be insane to like to open
oh
up this
my
conversation.
Goodness. Exactly. So was that one of your fears, or did you have
yeah.
another fear that was prominent?
Sleep deprivation, how to integrate a pretty feisty life purpose, a vocation, you know,
yes.
for me to write songs and write books and
oh yes,
and do what we're doing right now, you know, it's big, and do charity shows. You know, I just did one in San Francisco, and it's a big part of why I'm here. And my biggest fear was, you know, I don't want to let my son down. I don't want to let my husband down. I don't want to let
mm-hmm.
my vocation
mm-hmm.
down. You know, so that was a big fear about how I was going to integrate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yes.
And then for me, community, because as a celebrity, I have a tendency to be, and as a sensitive writer, slightly introverted, I have a tendency to insulate and isolate and be a little hermetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I had some intellectual understanding of the more I isolate myself, the more the higher potential for postpartum depression. So I was
mm-hmm.
like, oh no, that's my tendency to begin with.
Mm.
So I've had to sort of stand guard and not let myself disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say those were my top three.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them I did fall into. You know, some of them did happen. And mm-hmm. I just thought, well, here it is. Here's my worst
right.
fear.
Right.
And I'm still alive.
Yes, exactly.
Still here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, bringing the fears out of the darkness doesn't necessarily mean they won't happen, you
mm-hmm.
know. I mean, I think it's a very important piece for pregnant women to call those fears out on the mat and be honest about what you are afraid of. You know, the loss of identity is huge for so many people. You know, how am
yeah.
I going to maintain who I am in the world, in my work life,
mm-hmm.
and be a mother?
Yeah.
It's a you know huge, huge challenge and a huge fear for many, many women. The sleep, certainly, and then, you know, for a lot of women, there's fears about you know, how will I be as a mother? Will I be like my mother? Perhaps
mm-hmm.
I want to be just like my mother. Perhaps I don't want to be anything like my mother, you know?
Right, yeah.
So the whole idea of you know, me as an emerging mother,
mm.
And who is that? And so in my worldview and my work, it's about not saying that, you know, by being honest about the fears, it eradicates them,
mm-hmm.
but that you walk into motherhood with your eyes wide open, you know?
Yes. And then to also be able to celebrate the side that is so awesome in the ending of any kind of legacy of abuse or neglect
mm-hmm.
from the past, you know, to be mm. able to apply some new understandings. You know, I've done, and I already know you've done years and years of inner work and responsibility taking and, you know, attempting to snip some family contracts or some ways
mm-hmm.
of being that no longer
mm-hmm.
really serve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to apply those super intuitively with my son and ultimately on my best days in my marriage, too,
mm-hmm.
has really made this an unbelievable journey already, you know.
Mm.
So just to be able to welcome this creature into the world and do my best to let him know that life can be trusted and that love can be trusted and that he's protected but he's free and
mm-hmm.
all of these things that were
mm.
kind of lofty, beautiful ideas of how to bring up a child, you know, for me to be able to actually apply it is pretty awesome. And then to notice where I go a little too far, you know, it's all, for me, everything I do is all about a continuum. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's, for me, there's no real right or wrong. It's context. And,
mm-hmm.
and moderation or extreme, you know, where am I on this continuum of being selfless? Where am I on the continuum of being, you know, a mom versus an alpha working career woman? Where am I on the continuum of tending
mm-hmm.
to my marriage or, you know, understandably being slightly, you know, quote unquote, overly focused on my son?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so it's all about where I find myself on any of those continuums on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm approaching it more with noticing and fascination these
mm.
days versus thinking there's some right way to do this, because
mm.
I don't think there's a right way.
No, and that's such an important message for people to hear. You know, it's one of the top three themes that I hear in my work is that critical, berating, perfectionistic voice that thinks that there's a right way or a wrong way to do things.
It's my new pet peeve, by the way. You know, without mentioning any names, of course, but like just some, my new pet peeve is people coming in this really delicate, fragile time, which, by the way, is the shadow that I've claimed over the last 9 months, which is that I'm way more fragile than I've allowed myself to be. You know, so people come, my pet peeve is people coming in and having some projection or some opinion or some judgment.
Oh, yes.
About how I'm doing it. I'm just thinking, God, you know, I am just holding it together, you guys.
Oh, yes.
And if you knew it from the inside out, you would, all you would say is, can I get you a glass of water?
I know.
You know.
I know.
Yeah.
And the perspective of nobody knows your baby like you do.
No.
You know? And
yeah.
Nobody knows, you know, which I love when I come across that in somebody, because there's such a, the dominant model, whether it's pediatricians or mothers or friends or, you know, whoever, is I know your baby better than you do, and I know what you need better than you do, you know.
Hilarious. Especially the non-moms, that's the new pet peeve. And by the way, I've been her.
I know. We
that's
all
not
were.
Like, not
know.
Like I can't relate to the pet peeve. I was the pet peeve. So,
I know. You know, as I said to you last time, I could talk to you for 5 more hours, but we have all these wonderful people on the line, and I would love to open it up to some questions, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, love it.
Okay. So we are going to start with Mary Beth, and she is in Boston, Massachusetts. So I'm going to unmute her. And Mary Beth, are you there?
I am here.
Wonderful.
Hi, Alana.
Hi.
Greetings from Boston. I heard your husband's from these parts.
I know. As soon as I heard Massachusetts, I had a little crush.
Well, if you guys make it this way, we'll have to surely have a play date or something.
Sounds good.
So thank you, as always, for your incredible candor. Mm-hmm. Just about everything. You know, it's so funny. I saw that you were going to be doing a birthing story as part of the More Birthing business with Ricky Lake and so forth, and so excited about that, and I kept thinking in my head, oh, I bet she had this, like, idyllic, dreamy birth and so forth.
Oh,
so wonderful to hear you say, and I'm not happy to hear you had a bad medical real by any means, but it's nice to hear your honesty about that, because I remember hearing about Giselle's and how perfect and so forth.
Oh, my God. I know, I heard about hers, too, and I was like, wow, okay. That was not my experience, although it was, you know, beautiful in so many ways, and I, you know, I think I fell in love with my husband times 20 during that experience, but Ricky, the other day said to me something really sweet about my interview, and I just said to her, wow, I don't remember one word I said, because my brain was completely gone, and frankly still is. I might not remember what we're saying right now.
Yeah, it goes out with the placenta, I'm convinced.
Yeah, it does.
But anyway, but thank you for your candor, as always, and my question, I'm also, by the way, I have an 11-month-old named Grace, and I have a marriage that is 2 years old in 1 week's time. So I, too, did the whole shebang at once, and it definitely is a lot of different things at once, and it's kind of messy sometimes. So, but anyway, so I am 39. I had years of time to figure out how to self-care for myself. I'm in healthcare, so it was really important to figure out how to have self-time and reflect and process emotions. I've been a fan of yours since 1995, when you gave me permission to be angry about my own upbringing and a lot of things that in my life that were not working. So thank you for the journey the past 15, 16 years.
So
and
awesome.
Thank you for giving more permission to be incredibly honest journey. So, but anyway, I am finding the lack of space. I'm doing the attachment parenting thing. I'm very devoted to ending the legacy of my, unfortunately, not-so-hot upbringing. So my husband and I are very dedicated to that, and it's very challenging because I've been very successful in my career. I've been very into my career. I'm 39 years old. What else do you do with all that spare time? I look back like I attempted. I found the reflective time. Really, I'm struggling with that. I did a lot of yoga. I haven't been in a yoga studio now for months and months. I don't have a lot of personal space. And you are a huge, big part of your career is the reflection and the sort of inner space and so forth. How do you juggle this with trying to, you sort of touched on that, but are you feeling that loss? And how do you sort of balance while still giving due diligence to your attachment parenting style?
Most relevant question you could possibly ask me, because that's where the insanity comes in, because my personal space was something I always just kind of relied on. I took it for granted, and physical space, emotional space, spiritual space, you know, if we can quantify it as such, kind of flew out the window, and I'm only that's why I'm so grateful that Cheryl just mentioned the 9-month semi-milestone mm-hmm. because this personal space is slowly crawling back in, enough for me even to have this conversation right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, I don't know the details of how you approach, you know, whether you're on-demand breastfeeding, whether you pump or whatever you do, but I think just giving myself permission that there's not going to be any time.
Yeah.
You know, I think
the letting go is huge.
Yeah, just thinking, okay, if I was going to stay this version of insanity and this version of non-personal space, how would I have to live in order to make this sustainable? You know, and so that might mean I get my personal prayer time in my shower for 6.5 minutes, you know, before Ever's brought in and I'm breastfeeding again. And, you know, I'm just trying to find God in different ways. And I have written about 30 songs over the last 9 months. And, I was reminded by this beautiful Eckhart Tolle quote, which says, "The only way for pure creativity," I'm kind of paraphrasing and likely slaughtering his words, but what I got from it was the real creativity and channeling or direct connection to God comes from being super in the present moment. Mm. You know, so when I'm thinking about the future of, oh, my God, how am I going to do this financially, emotionally, creatively, how is this sustainable? Or if I'm thinking about the past, some traumas or something I haven't processed, you know, I'm not feeling the new ideas that could come, you know, ideas that could come in the form of realizing how to steal 6 minutes here and 2 minutes mm-hmm. here. And mm-hmm. for me, my insomnia, even though on one hand it's been a real challenge, you know, it's really quiet in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Why not read a couple of quotes from Adyashanti? This is my mm-hmm. personal versions of spiritual practice. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm up anyway, why don't I burn a little incense and light a candle and see mm-hmm. what comes? Or, mm-hmm. you know, if my, you know, the whole nap when your baby's napping thing is such a great idea in theory, but it hasn't really so much worked out for me.
I don't know anyone who it's worked out for. Honestly, yeah. That should just be abolished as a piece of advice.
I hear that all the time, and I just picture all these amazing heroic mothers sleeping and sawing logs next to their babies, and I'm like, how do they do it? So to speak to your what I think is the conversation that you're in around how to carve out time for yourself. Some of it you got to get creative, but that whole thing of it's hard to come up with some creative solution from this place of overwhelm. How can I come up with an idea of where to carve out an extra 22 minutes?
Right, because that actually takes some time to even
think about the idea.
You know, and it's yeah. hard too. I think sometimes for me to like it's like having to impromptu. Okay, I've got 2 hours. Go. This is what you need to do in this like
yeah.
2 hours in terms of processing. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely. Definitely challenging, but I do enjoy your point about, you make a great point about being in the present moment, and children are wonderful for that. And after, you know, like I said, I came to this later in life, and after years of probably thinking too much, overthinking things about the past, the future, and worrying this and that, mm-hmm. it's a relief in a way. It feels
yeah.
kind of nice. So
and my
that's
mantra,
the other side of it.
That's so awesome. And my mantra the last couple of days has been, what's wrong with this moment?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just keep thinking, when I'm here, nothing's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I think, oh, God, you know, it's going to be 5 o'clock soon, and then I'm pooched. Then I'm off, you know, off to the races with the voices that will bring great stress to my chest and my
yeah.
throat and my back and my whole
yeah.
chest.
Yeah.
And then puttering, you know, it's kind of a basic thing, but when I putter, I'm so happy. So if I'm cleaning up downstairs or I'm moving things or I'm moving the diapers from the top shelf to the second shelf. You know, it's like puttering is next to godliness for me. Maybe because my mind is a little occupied, you know, and as soon as my mind gets a little break, some lovely grace kind of creeps in. So, I don't know, recommending puttering and not having any expectations that there's even going to be those 22 minutes, and if you get them, high fives, and if you don't, you know, next best thing could perhaps be the presence thing. But you know what? Again, I've really surrendered to the first year just being this beautiful chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And if it happens for longer than a year, my God, I'm calling you, Cheryl. Yeah.
Thank you, Mary Beth.
Great.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
It's a great question. I just have to comment on that conversation, which I just felt so enlivened by because you know, something that happens in that first year, first few months, or what, you know, however long you can surrender to that chaos and to that space of sort of non-time, non-linear time. Mm-hmm. I too had many moments being up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and all of a sudden recognizing just the gorgeousness of, you know, of that solitude, of sitting in that chair with my son nursing, and how quiet, and, you know, and really looking at the silhouette of the tree on the wall. And, I mean, I have such vivid memories, despite my sleeplessness, of that time, and the way that it's, you know, it's baby time, it's 24-hour time, you know, where to me that's really more about the feminine as well. It's making nighttime something that's alive. Mm. You know, it's being on a cat schedule. You sleep here and there, and, you know, you're lucky if you can piece together 3 or 4 hours. And,
yeah, truly.
And then, you know, just to zoom out, because I'm 7 years in, and I have a 2.5-year-old, and we homeschool, and everything is this cohesive, organic life where there is really, really very little separate time for me. Mm. And it's been this massive reorganization and reconditioning, rethinking about what it means to have self time, because I spent my 20s just immersed in that delicious endless time of, you know, of selfhood, and I started with a big reservoir of that, but to find those 6.5 minutes, you know, when they're swinging in the swings and I'm sitting in the chair and I can look up at the cottonwoods and the sky and the clouds and the sun, and that's what fuels me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And I can fill up in those 6 minutes to get, you know, to get through the next however many hours, you know.
Yeah.
Or to recognize that exercise isn't this separate thing, that I can find ways to do that with my kids, to go hiking, to go for a walk, to make that integrated. So, you know, I think it's a much more integrated, organic life where there's not as much, you know, partitioning off.
Right, and it's less compartmentalized. And I have to say, it's one of the best parts for me of this new role is integrating everything. Like the days of old where I would do, you know, 400 push-ups and sit-ups and you know, run, you know, the marathon training that I was doing, I just think, God, you know, there's nothing in the world that makes me happier than working up a sweat, carrying Ever, or running with him, or just, you know, even a short, small, quick walk in the sun. I mean, there's nothing better than that. You know, wow, this is a way better version than me, you know, killing myself on the treadmill. I mean, God bless killing myself on the treadmill. That's its own endorphin high, you know.
Right.
But this integrated version that you just spoke about is really one of my favorite parts about motherhood is this beautiful blending. You know, I've always enjoyed blending essential oils and blending smells and blending paints and blending, you know, ingredients that are unusual together, fusing food and cult, you know, culinary styles. And this whole thing is the ultimate blending. I mean, it's, you know, how can I clean my room and elicit a giggle from Ever at the same time? You know, how can I go for the? How can I get a workout and have Ever see these new flowers? And, you know, it's this ultimate blending of everything. And then also the priorities, the cream rises to the top in terms of friendships, in terms of priorities and work.
That's right.
You know, if there's 47 projects that I was doing before, the top 4 have really emerged. And if I had, you know, all due respect to a huge community of friends that I've had over the years, you know, the top 12 are really clear to me now. And, you know, and when I have time with my husband, it's like, wow, let's really milk this, you know, this date that we're on here, because we have 2 hours. So Ed, there's a quality of presence and, I don't know, there's an attunement that I bring to every moment now, almost mandatorily because of the urgency I have of really trying to make sure that there's a quality that is brought to it.
And that's such an important context to hold for people, for women, mothers that are swallowed up, that are in the midst of, you know, of that chaos and drowning in the overwhelming, understanding that with every loss, you know, the loss of self-time, the loss of, you know, being able to compartmentalize it, with every loss, there's this opportunity for birthing something new.
Bless you for that.
You know, and something more beautiful. than you could ever imagine when you're open to it and when you can grieve that loss and when you can recognize, okay, I don't get 5 hours to lounge, to sit in my bed and meditate. You know, I don't get that anymore. Those days are over.
Yeah, I look at my bathtub and I just think, wow, remember when we used to be 104 degrees?
That's right.
Remember the scalding hot bath time we used to have?
Uh-huh. Yeah. All by myself with bubbles and music. Yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, because what you mentioned is the payoff to really softening and surrendering into the chaos, for me, has always come in retrospect. You know, hindsight 2020 has always been this sweet kind of reward for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would say anything to myself and to my friends, and I have in my own way, it's that it's okay for it to be a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay for me to be beseeching God's mercy while I'm in a postpartum depression walk, or, you know, when I'm just thinking, wow, my husband and I really, we need 4 hours to work this out, but we don't even have 4 minutes. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, what am I going to do? You know, and
mm-hmm.
I, you know, the letting it just kind of be a bit of a sweet disaster is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's this sweet payoff of hindsight and objectivity and this bird's eye view on all of this that is so graceful, you know, like, in my worst moments, I just think, okay, Alana, if you're 99 years old, you're 20 years away from your deathbed, and you're looking back on your life, and you're going, okay, remember that era where I had 1, 2, or 3 kids? You know, remember that era? First of all, I probably won't remember most of it. I'll probably have idealized and romanticized most of it.
Uh-huh.
The amnesia will have for sure kicked in.
Yes.
It'll be reduced to like 7 pages in my diary, and it'll be something like, wow, what a hard, beautiful, amazing time. Anyway.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, someone said to me once as a new mother, you know, the days are long, but the years fly by, you know, and sometimes it feels that way. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's only 3 o'clock, you know. And my kid's not going to go to sleep till 7,
you know,
but it's recognizing that it does actually fly by in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And it's okay to be a cranky, irritable, complainy little monster. You know? I mean, just let yourself be that girl. And, you know, God bless the tolerance levels of friends and family and partners, you know. And for me, too, also let go of the thought that there'd be some miraculous way for me and the men, the beautiful men in my life, to completely understand what I'm going through.
That's right.
You know, I used to have this really naive and, you know, desire for the men that I love to really grok what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm just like, you know what, there's no way they can.
There's no way.
With the largest amount of empathy, which my husband has a lot of,
mm-hmm.
there's just no way for them to be able to relate. And I have to just totally let go.
Mm-hmm.
Of needing the male species to understand what this experience is like, period.
That's right. And likewise, as women, we can never really understand what they're going through either. You know?
Nope.
You know, what it is to be a father today and whatever issues are being triggered and constellated and what it is to be to have so many needs as a man and be living in a culture where it's expected that all of those are supposed to be met by their wife, who they just basically lost. Because
right.
the child was born,
God bless
know?
Them. I mean, they really do. They lose us
mm-hmm.
on so many different levels.
They really do.
Oh, man.
They really do. And, you know, there were many times in history and different, you know, configurations of living and where it wasn't so pronounced a loss because they had more community around. They had, you know, they had the community of men where they could go and commiserate and, you know,
or go, you know, shoot the deer, whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever it was. Exactly. That's right. They would go and do their male ritual, you know.
Yeah. And now that the roles are shifting, you know, on so many hands, it's the greatest thing that I could imagine. What an amazing era to be in as a woman.
Mm.
And at the same time, it's, you know, the roles are so, you know, at times amorphous and wonky that the men are, I'm assuming and imagining and have heard firsthand that it's a whole new defining of their place and their role and not being required to be, you know, hairy women, as Alison Armstrong puts it.
Right.
You know, they don't have to be women, you know. So that's also why I think having women around is really powerful. And one other thing that I think is so important to bring up is how important humor is. You know,
mm-hmm.
and in those dire moments, you know, not always a huge invitation for me to be laughing, but as the months have gone on, it's just such a crack up. My friend Johanna Stein has I think her website's called MotherEffed.com.
Uh-huh.
She did a video based on trying to bring her little daughter on a flight. and it cracked me up. So just the more humor, not only I can watch online or just if I can giggle and laugh with my girlfriends,
yes,
that's been a huge gift for me.
Oh, yes. Yes, and humor. I'm familiar with her. I think I've seen some of her. It's hilarious. Humor that lays it all out, you know, that is, you know, honest and admits how friggin' hard this is.
You know? Yeah.
And
you know, then you said it too, the village part. Like, this is a whole new era where villagefulness is not so much the norm, you know. So I think about, you know, we're in our isolated little boxes on our streets. And
yes.
And, you know, to get to your friend's house, it's a 72-minute drive or a 12-minute drive. And, you know, do I have that in me today? Probably not. I could Skype, I suppose, but it's not quite the same thing as someone petting my head.
Yes.
When was the last time I had my head pet?
Yes.
Which is another segue into, you know, one of the greatest things about motherhood as well for me is all these things that I'm providing my son. It's an amazing mirror to see, like, wow, at some point when it's appropriate and when there's time, and that could be even today, how can I provide some of these things for my own self? You know, if I'm providing this amazing temperatured bath and this soft fabric and the petting of his head, you know, how can I foster that in my own life for my own self, you know, so that I'm not this bedraggled, you know, starving, deprived mother trying to give something that I don't even receive myself. So, you know, I'm kind of contradicting what I said a few minutes ago, but it, you know, it's also this invitation, and maybe more easily done after the 9-month mark. But to get the snuggles and to get the, you know, if I'm going to put this really amazing soft blanket around Ever, I'm going to wrap myself in one too at the same time. You know.
Yes. So I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I know we have others on the line, so I'm just going to, I just lost the person I was going to invite to ask a question. Well, she wrote it an email, so I'm going to ask it for her. This is from Madishka, and she is in Australia. She says, Alanis, lifelong fan here. You mentioned in your online journal not long after Ever's birth that the physical changes you experienced were shocking, surprising. I am 34 and 14 weeks pregnant with my first child and already scared by the changes. What was the biggest physical shock for you, and how did you reconcile it with it? Love, always. So I think we touched a bit on that, but that's just slightly different.
Yeah, I love the granular, like, really physical aspect of that question. And for me, it's the pain, you know, whether it's all this relaxing in my body made my joints and my feet and my back, and now with nursing in these really weird positions that I stay in for long, many moments and hours on end in order to be able to feed Ever properly. I mean, my body's in pain a lot.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I've hurt myself too a couple times, you know, without getting into details, you know, the many hormones rushing through my body and how my brain is a little spaced out. You know, it's been hard for me to be one of the losses, speaking of losses, is the loss of profound coordination. You know, I'm not as coordinated, I don't feel as strong, I don't feel as predictably kind of nimble, you know. So I've hurt myself a bunch of times, and I was in pain a lot through my pregnancy and through after the birth time too, and even up till this very moment. So that's been a whole new identity to embrace, the girl whose body hurts. Yikes.
Yes.
You know, so her question was, what was the question again?
What was the biggest physical shock for you, and how did you reconcile it?
Yeah, I think the relaxing going through my body. So, you know, I wish I could say in a fantastical way that I had 73 angels flying in to massage my feet every night. And, you know, I definitely had massages during pregnancy, and that was really, really awesome. And some chiropractic work was huge for me anyway. But I can't say that I've been having a lot of those since Ever has been born. So, you know, I kind of sneak it in with him, like I said about soft fabrics a few seconds ago. You know, if I want to give him a bath, as best as I can, I try to enjoy the bath myself. And if I want to pet his little head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think that mothering was really a one-way experience, me loving him.
Mm.
But I'm realizing that it's not altogether a selfish thing to receive through that process.
Mm.
Because I, you know, having been so terrified of being, I don't want to, you know, the fear of being the narcissistic mom, I was just like, God, you know, I don't want to be taking from him. I just want to be giving, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I realized that
mm-hmm.
it's perfectly appropriate to derive great benefit and love through the skin on skin and through the connection, and
mm-hmm.
and that there is some great receiving to be had as a mom through the process
yes.
of bonding with your kid. And I at first felt really guilty about that, but
mm.
but now I just feel like, hey, you know what? It's a win-win over here.
Oh yes, take it where you can get it.
No joke.
Yeah, sometimes my little 7-year-old, he'll just kind of like tickle my back, and
yeah.
I, you know, for like a second, you know, and I'll just, I mean, it's so pathetic that, you know, 1 second, oh,
again,
you know.
Again, take it where you can.
I know.
Yeah. Just, you know, he'll play with my hair, and, you know, there'll be a voice saying, you know, don't, you know, don't inappropriately take from your little baby. And then I just say, you know what, it's really sweet that he's playing with my hair.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Alanis, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, as our call about your transition into marriage, I know, has been incredibly validating and illuminating for many, many people, you know, this will do the same for the transition into motherhood. And I tend to think that, I don't know, those of us that are willing to be honest about the challenges and the chaos sometimes get hit with it for that reason, you know, that the traumatic birth, you know, that it wasn't Giselle's birth, and it wasn't, you know, I was surrounded by friends who had home births and just described them as just purely divine experiences.
And you know what? It was for them.
And it was for them. Oh, I have no doubt. You
yeah.
know, I mean, they were
like,
just,
wow.
They came off of it ecstatic and sailing and flying, and
yep.
that was not mine. And yet my work is about, you know, understanding what it is when it's not that, so that I can be of service for people.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't get the baby who slept 12 hours after 3 months, you know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, why don't you text me at 4 a.m?
Yeah, well, I'm up.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, because I didn't get the second one either, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that serves me. And I think for you to have this voice and to be able to share the perspective that says, hey, you know, it was not bliss and roses every second. And yes, the love is over the top, divine, unimaginable, beyond anything. And it is really, really, really hard. It's such an important voice for people to hear. So thank you once again for your incredible honesty, your willingness to go to these deep conversations that are not just about, you know, hey, what is your baby? What are the tricks your baby's doing today? You know, it's
yeah, and there's some of those too. But
those are fun. Those are fun conversations.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're
yeah.
great. I'm curious. I want to know. But
yeah.
you know, but this is important, really important, because this transition is you know, one of those that is life altering.
Yeah, and I thank you. I just, you know, I want to go on record just thanking you for formally inviting this conversation microcosmically between you and I, and just on a larger macro level too, because it's the voice that you're offering and the conversation that you're inviting people to join you in is a very sacred one, and one that will offer great solace to moms like me who are kind of losing it in moment,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So to know you exist, and to know that you're writing, you know, blogs and having interviews and writing books makes this whole motherhood world a much better place for me, so thank you.
You're so welcome. Blessings to you, and may the angels of sleep magically descend on you tonight.
And if they don't, well then, you know, there'll be some nice fun journaling going on.
Exactly, whatever is meant to be.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks, Cheryl. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye, everyone.